First, let me tell you one thing, boss. I'm a mechanical person. You are a chemist. Based on what I heard, it seems to me there's a big, big difference in our thinking. For example, we think, we the mechanical people, we think that one fiber, it's symmetric. That's the way we look at it. Based on what you said, and you're right, I'm not denying at all. But the fact remains, our background is entirely different than what you just described.
And yet they call my discipline molecular mechanics.
I know, but my point is this. When we look at, we say cotton variety is different, there are a million variations and variables and all that, that's true. But when we look at one fiber, we say it's symmetric in all respects, except that its structure, physical structure is different, not the chemistry. In other words, primary wall, secondary wall, lumen, this and that. But when it comes to our way of thinking, we think that if I take one fiber, I assume that chemistry-wise, it's pretty the same from one end to the other end. But based on what I hear from here, it's quite possible that within a fiber, the chemistry may be different, depending upon the molecular setup and all that kind of stuff.
You're right.
So if that is right, then I'm wrong. So what's the sense of me presenting here anything? No, really, there's a big difference. But anyway, this is the way I look at it. Our knowledge is very, very limited, especially my knowledge of chemistry is zero. So I don't understand. Fact remains that we have to present something since I'm on the schedule. All right, boss. Well, the title of this presentation is Application of Nanotechnology in Textiles and Cotton Nonwovens, a review. I hope everybody knows Dr. Condon, Parikh, everybody knows. Mr. Reynolds, Michael Reynolds, and James Riddle, these are the two new guys who have just joined us about a month ago. And they are really good people, and they have worked in the industry for about 22 years each in nonwovens. Of course, not cotton nonwovens, but nonwovens is nonwovens. So with that, let me go to the next slide, which is the next slide. So what is nanotechnology? You know, nanotechnology is almost a household name nowadays. And practically in all manufacturing industries, not only textiles, many other industries, nanotechnology is the name of the game. So what is it? Let's see what it is. Nanotechnology is a rapidly growing science that deals with the understanding, manipulation, transformation, control, and efficient utilization of matter at the nanometer dimension, or say nearest molecular level. Why it is so critical and why so important? I think that's the main reason. Number two is the main reason here. The surface area of matter or material in nano form is generally an order of magnitude greater than that of its bulk matter of equivalent mass. Obviously, this attribute in itself is a great benefit for many applications. Now, that's where the difference between a chemist and a mechanical engineer comes. When I look at a fiber, I say fiber is exactly the same, I'm going to cut it here. When we cut into two pieces, so you are really adding the area of the cross-section. Before it was two edges, now we've got four cross-sections, so you've got more area. Now, again, I cut each piece into two, so I keep on cutting, let's say, up to the nano stage, not one nano, but in textiles, we typically, I think by definition, we say 100 to 150 nanometer in diameter, we call nanomaterial. So what I'm trying to emphasize here is that if you are correct, and I'm sure 100% you are correct because you have done a lot of work here, based on our limited knowledge, I personally feel, that if it's the lumen of the cotton fiber, which really is the most respected attribute of the fiber. Otherwise, if you ask me, cotton doesn't have any other feature. People can talk anything they want to, but if they understand the basics of fibers, cotton is the only fiber in the world which really has a phenomenal capillary phenomenon of not only taking the moisture, but dissipating at a certain rate depending upon the environment and ambient conditions. That's the characteristics of cotton fiber which really keeps it apart from all other fibers. And if that is true, and that is true because everybody says, I feel comfortable with cotton, and that's a fact. So if I take one fiber and keep on cutting into, let's say, 1,000 parts or 100,000 parts, or even go to the nano stage, seems to me the lumen will still be intact. Now, I don't know, based on the chemistry I heard now, seems like it may not be. Crystallinity is different, amorphous region is different. In surface, you told me just 38% of the surface has molecules of cellulose compared to the other one. So that's an entirely different picture. If that is true, then what I'm saying is 100% wrong. Because I'm assuming that fiber is consistent, even though it may have primary walls, secondary walls, lumen, this and that. But as far as chemistry is concerned, seems to me, in one fiber, not among the fibers, within one fiber, the chemistry from one region to another region should be the same. And if it is the same, that's the whole thesis of what I'm going to say. If that is not true, then just listen and let's go home. That's all. Okay, boss. So basically what I'm saying is, nanotechnology main advantage really is that you can keep on cutting or splitting or whatever you want to call it into so small parts that the area of the matter is much greater, in the order of magnitude greater, 10 times, whatever you want to call it, than the bulk matter, equivalent bulk matter in mass. A nanometer, you all know, is about 1,000th of a micron or 1 billionth of a meter. In other words, the smallest unit I know, linear unit, I know the angstrom. So 10 angstrom make 1 nanometer. So you can understand nanometer is a very small dimension as well. So small quantity of, say, 2 to 5%, for example, even 1%, I would say, if you take 1% of some material and put it on cotton fabric or some other fabric, and it can completely cover it and give the attributes, surface characteristics of that particular material which we are putting on, you made it. Because in bulk treatment chemistry, when you put fabrics in the traditional ways, it add on so much. It really distorts the properties of the inherent, of the intrinsic material. If it is a permeable, it may become impermeable. If it is flame retardant, it may become otherwise. If it is water absorbent, it may become repellent to water because of the bulk addition of the additional materials. But in this case, the pore and the size of those particles so small that it really doesn't interfere with the interspaces or the air spaces of the fabric structure. So it will coat the fibers and yarns or whatever you want to call it, but the air spaces between the yarns or fibers are still intact, which means it has the properties what cotton is famous for. So small quantity of this thing can go on. So my thinking was twofold. The way I look at it, again, this has never been disclosed before. This is the, I'm the first one here, and this is the first time I'm disclosing here other than in the house, in-house. If you keep, there are two ways to look at it. One is to take the materials which we think will give special attributes to the fiber. For example, you want flame retardancy. Take clay, make it in nanoparticles, spray it onto the cotton fabric, it becomes flame retardant. Similarly, take silicon and put it on in nanoform, put it on a fabric, it becomes soft fabric. So like that, you can develop many, many surface properties of the fabric, which are very critical and crucial for many, many applications, both in civilian and military applications. But the fact remains is that what I said before, my hypothesis is that a fiber is consistent as far as chemical properties are concerned. If that is true, then there's no reason why we should not be able to fibrillate or cut a cotton fiber into nano-sized particles or fibers or fibrils, whatever you want to call them, longitudinally, not laterally, like Al said, laterally is different structure. I'm talking about now longitudinally, along with the intact lumen. So if that is the case, and if we can find some method of adhesively coating a textile fabric, non-woven or woven alike, or even knitted fabric, any fabric, and impregnate that fabric with the nano-sized particles, the way I described, it seems to me it should impart the characteristics of cotton to that particular fabric. So in other words, what I'm trying to shoot at is this. Suppose what I'm saying is correct, which is not, seems like based on what I heard, but suppose if it is, hypothetically, then in that case, we can really use a little bit of cotton and make polyester, for example, as I said in the previous, one of these previous presentation, ladies still do not prefer cotton, even though they like it, they want comfort, but they, based on the sales, they still prefer polyesters and other nylon and all that kind of stuff. So if we can really, one under face of the fabric, if we can impregnate or cover with this kind of technology, cotton fibers, just 1% or maybe 2%, and give the comfort factor which people want, I think that will be super. Again, this isn't just a hypothesis. God knows what's going to happen, but we'll try to explore a little bit more on it. This is the basically hypothesis, what I was talking about. This is an hypothetical cross-section of a cotton fiber showing about 20,000 imaginary cotton nanoparticles of 1 nanometer diameter. Of course, as I said before, there's no such thing 1 nanometer. There's no way on earth. You people, perhaps chemists, can see it and feel it and imagine. At least a person like me can't even imagine 1 nanometer diameter particle. So in this particular case, I'm assuming from textile standpoint, 100 to 150 nanometer diameter, we can call it still nanometer, nanotechnology, and 250 nanometer in length. If I can take a cotton single fiber and convert it into 100 nanometer diameter and 250 nanometer length sections, then I have approximately I think 2 million fibrils of this kind in one fiber. So 2 million fibrils sounds great, but if you look at the weight, it will be about 60,000 carbon fibers, which is approximately 0.3 grams in fibrillated or nanoform, which will be required to impart a micron thick coating to 1 square meter surface of a, say, polyester fabric to conceptually provide cotton-like wear comfort. So if it works, as I said, the hypothesis is the cotton fibers exactly chemistry-wise is exactly the same. Different fibers may behave differently, that's true, we know that. But a particular fiber should behave the same way. And if we mix the fiber in such a way as we always do in order to get the homogeneity we always need and we get, then it seems to me we should be able to, either electrostatically or mechanically or by water impact or something, we should be able, sonic, ultrasonic, or cavitation, or whatever you want to call it, by some technology we should be able to split the cotton fiber into its nano fibrils or particles, and then we can use those particles to impart the surface characteristics we need. Now this is actually true application. In other words, their second way of using nanotechnology for the benefit of cotton textile is we take different compounds and try to convert them into, transform them into nanoscale particles or fibers, and then put it onto the cotton fabric to get the properties we want. And these are actually, they are being done day in and day out now. There are many, many companies, in fact, all around the world now, who are doing this using nanotechnology to impart UV rays and radiation protection, breathability, coating of special coatings of different adhesives, stain resistance, cotton fibers, core and wrap yarn construction, and fire repellency or fire absorbency. In other words, based on the characteristics you want, surface characteristics you want, it is now very possible to really transform the bulk materials into nanoparticles and then put it onto the fabric. Again, this is a concept. I'm good in conceiving concept, but not good enough to make anything practical. This is a concept to make a really non-woven undershirt. Now we are 6-7 billion people over the planet. If it really works and half the price, I personally feel this is the way to go. I mean, if you can produce a nice, durable, good hand, a good soft hand and comfortable and all that, made out of cotton, 100% cotton, and at half the price, and it can be made if we use these technologies, what I'm conceiving here, and that is, you start with the fibers. We still have to learn how to really clean it 100% so we can hydro-entangle it. And once it's hydro-entangled and online, it can be really, one surface of the fabric can be subjected to nanotechnology, some fiber, some kind, for silicone, for example, in the case of improving hand. And then online, and just nowadays you will be surprised if you go to a denim manufacturer or converters, they have got layers of thousand layers, like from floor to almost meter and a half, and the water jet comes and cuts all the way down to, that's the way they cut patterns nowadays. So if they can do that, there's no reason why we should not be able to have 100 layers or 150 layers of these fabrics, and a gun comes, or the water or air or whatever, and it cuts and fuses. In other words, one jet will bring the air or water to cut it, the second jet, coaxial nozzle, will bring a fusible fiber, some kind of, nowadays on the TV you watch, the adhesives are $19.90, he gives you bottles, and he says you can patch anything else, parachute comes and this and that. What it tells me, there are chemical compounds now available which will permanently give, join these surfaces without a sewing or cutting and all that kind of stuff. So this is a thought, in my opinion, if we start with one project like that, from undergarment, because we still don't know how to clean cotton so good so that can be made into that. So in the case of underwear, I don't think it's that critical. The comfort is important, that's what it is all about. So if we can produce a shirt, undershirt, which will sell half the price, I think that's the way to go. Again, it's a concept, it may or may not work. Now, we can talk all day long about concepts and all that kind of stuff, but the first thing really is how to transform different compounds into their nano stage. Sometimes you can easily do it, and other times you can't. So there are many, many methods really. As I said, I worked for Rockwell International for many years, and at that time I didn't understand what was going on, but now I do understand. it was the electrostatic force which was splitting the carton cellulose fiber into something, which was creating a gel-like substance in moisture. When the humidity was high, moisture was there, that stuff in the form of viscous will come, and that will make some sort of paste. And we didn't know, the whole company failed actually, that's the reason I'm here. That was the only reason we didn't understand what was going on, and that was creating a defect. We made 60 machines, sold all over the world. Rockwell is the best company in the world, was at least. And we just couldn't solve that problem, and that's how we closed everything. So my point is, there should be a way of converting carton fiber into nanoparticles, or nanofibers rather, instead of saying particles. So electrospinning is one method, that is, matter is fused. This is applicable to only fusible polymers, not natural like cellulose. Matter in fused, molten, or solution form is subjected to a high electric potential, up to 60 kilovolts, extruded through a spinneret of nano-sized pores or orifices, and laid onto the grounded plate. The nanofibers have significantly improved physical, mechanical, and or chemical properties. Now, we are saying here, it depends upon how you fibrillate, how you do things, but based on the standard compounds, what are available now, organic basically, the physical will change, mechanical change, and chemical properties will change as well. Second method is a coagulation-based carbon nanotube spinning method. In this method, actually what happens, composite nanofibers are produced from synthetic nanofibers by simultaneous reduction of fiber as well as increasing the twist. So when you stretch or draw, at the same time you're putting a lot of twist in it, and that reduces the diameter still further, which means you are making nano diameter size fibers. This is relatively new process, very good, I like it very much. I have no knowledge about much knowledge about it, but based on my reading only, it seems to me this is the best method for our carton applications. And in this process, the dissociation of certain materials in solution of low concentration or viscosity into their cationic and anionic groups of molecules is utilized to alternatively and repeatedly deposit nano-thick layers of the nano-ionic components of the materials. What I'm saying is here, basically you take a compound, put in a beaker, let it ionize, for example, ferrous oxide, for example, or ferrous something, and their ion and cations, you just dip it, one layer will go of anions, then you dip another beaker, take cations, and keep on doing until you get the thickness you need, and by that you really get fine layers, maybe 100 nanometer thick layers of this compound or this substance onto the carton fabric, which otherwise in other methods like bulk treatments, like we always do, we may not be able to achieve the end results we're looking for. In this case, for example, as I said before, sometimes the intrinsic property of a fabric is that it must be permeable to either air or gas or water or something. And if you put in bulk stage these materials, coatings, that property is lost. But in this case, seems to me, it really will work and will not allow the intrinsic property to change very much. So what are the applications of nanotechnology in textile processes today? Plenty of them. Nanotechnology provides plenty of efficient tools and techniques to develop unique surface structures and hence new and improved fabric attributes and functionalities. For example, deposition of silver in nano format provides satisfactory antimicrobial and wound healing features. Our Vince knows 100 times more than I know, so he will certify that. Nanofiltration membranes are used to recover expensive and environment sensitive dyes and other chemicals in textile wet processing while conserving pressured water as well. Yes, this morning we heard from Dr. from Cotton Incorporated guy, Mr. Mansoro, Mark Mansoro, that I think he said 90% or 95% of the consumption of energy is in the finishing alone. I didn't know that. I thought we in mechanical processing we could use quite a bit, but based on that slide, it seems to me it's the wet finishing where a lot of water energy and is utilized. So if we can develop technology, we'll conserve water and energy. I think that's a good sign as well. Integration of carton substrates, whether woven or non-woven, with clay or ceramic nanoparticles may offer thermal stability and even fire protection to the end product. Finishing of fabrics by using nanotechnology considerably enhances the fabric hand, surface, texture, color, and or other special aesthetic and functional properties. Nanotextile, this is a trademark, I think it's a Greensboro-based company, a USA USA-based company has developed several nano treatments to even achieve superior mechanical properties. Now that is something strange. We're talking about nano deposition of particles, and now we're talking about significant increase in mechanical properties, like abrasion resistance, for example, even tensile. I don't know how they get it, but that's what the literature says. Even achieve superior mechanical properties such as tensile strength, tear strength, abrasion resistance, enhanced durability of certain fabrics. Nanotech's nanopel technology utilizes the concept of surface engineering to develop hydrophobic fabric surfaces that are capable of repelling liquids and resisting stains while complementing the other desirable attributes such as breathability, softness, and comfort. Recently, Beringer and Hoffer have also demonstrated that by combining hydroxylapatite, titanium oxide, zinc oxide, and ferrous oxide with our other organic and inorganic substances, the fabric surface can be modified to achieve improved abrasion resistance, UV, EM, and infrared protections, and water repellency. I'm sorry. These are some of the textile applications. There are really very few, and believe me or not, these are in existence, have been in existence for at least 5 years, if not more. Military and combat outfit now is surface finished by nanotechnology to get whatever they want. Camouflage and tents, jackets and gloves, sportswear, hygienic underwear, composite fabrics, UV protective clothing, medical fabrics and tissue engineering, climate control garments, electronic textile. Now, this may sound little strange, but it's true. Nowadays, they can use textiles as electronic components in computers and servers and you name it, stretch fabrics, etc. Well, there's a cautionary note as well to everything. Nothing is always good. There's something negative as well. So in this particular case, there are certain technical limitations as well as some concerns about unknown health risks pertaining to the rapid developments and growth of nanotechnologies and their end use. For example, it's extremely difficult to process carbon fibers of less than 200 nanometer with traditional textile procedures and practices. We still do not know any short-term or even long-term unknown health risks, especially the probable risk of pulmonary lung diseases due to the nano size of the particles to the people involved in the production, conversion, and even use of nanoproducts. We don't know long-term effects of these technologies. Incidentally, the Washington Post recently had raised an alert to that effect as well. Well, morally, we are obliged to thank the US taxpayers, the Congress, the cotton industry leaders and stakeholders, and of course, the USDAR's management, the agency administrator, national program staff, area director, and center director for approving, for providing the crucial financial and moral support for this work. Thank you all. Any questions?
Number of molecules in the second slide. Was that just kind of a linear, stepwise succession of mathematical steps that you did? And you ended up with that, or at last study with 60,000 cotton fibers?
This was purely geometric calculation. We knew the dimension of the atoms. We know the molecular structure of the atoms, so add them up, and then strictly, as they say, it's a symmetric volume, basically, area into length, and multiply, keep on multiplying, and that's how we got. And that's what I didn't know whether right or wrong. It could be an order of magnitude off. But then I did ask Dr. French, and he said, it looks all right. So I don't know, I said, I may do it again, but this is strictly based on geometric, not the way you people do things. Strictly the area, length, dimension, and volume, and density of the, we know the density and all that, and then from there we calculate the number of molecules. Came out something like 50 billion in typical 1 inch long fiber.
You're assuming that if you could spin these fibers at that?
No, we're not spinning balls, that's what I'm saying, that's the difference. We're not spinning.
Well, then there would be no practical way to isolate them.
That's what I'm asking Dr. Frank, Dr. Yu, and Vince, and Dr. everybody else. I don't know how to adhesively coat the fiber. I don't know. Whether it's stable or not, I don't. But you know, listen, atom is not stable. Molecules are stable. Now, if we know that molecule is stable. Now, we're talking about not one molecule, two molecules. We're talking about 100 nanometers.
Oh, you might be interested to know that I have, at SRRC, I've got 7 or 8 grams of cotton nanoliskers that are about 20 angstroms in diameter and about 20 nanometers in diameter and 200 nanometers.
So you have got, where do you get, how do you get it?
Basically, it's a mechanical treatment to chop up the fiber.
That's what I was thinking.
Then a sulfuric acid hydrolysis.
Okay, now the Vince question, how are we going to put this onto a fiber adhesively, permanently?
Well, that's another question.
Well, it's been in the same sense that you used it during the spinning process to make nanomaterials, which, as you mentioned in your talk, involves an
electrospin. Okay.
Uh-huh. Right. And that's, of course, been done with collagen.
No, cotton I don't think anybody has done, but other fibers have been done. Cotton I don't think anybody has done, but this is the first
There's
one.
There's some electrospun cellulosics.
Yeah.
As I told you before, with Rockwell, 10 years, I worked 12 years with Rockwell International. I was the second man in the company. The job was to really produce superior quality cotton yarns using electrostatic spinning. It was a Betel patent, but we licensed from Betel. And the only problem, we made machines. I mean, we worked 12 years, I'm telling you, in Greensboro, North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina. We sold machines all over the world, making sewing threads, excellent sewing threads. Nobody could even come close to, no thread could come close to. But what was happening in high-speed sewing machine, the rate is so high, even a little defect comes, it either break the yarn or break even the needle. A lot of heat is created, and if that damaging comes, it breaks, and they can't afford to stop it. Because of that defect only, we did not know what was happening. Electrostatically, we had, I think, 40 kilovolts between the two plates. And the fibers are coming straight as you can think of, much better than even combing. Nobody can comb it. Well, 100% parallel fibers. But all of a sudden, for no reason, as I said, 5-6 PhD physics from California, from the Sutter program, came to help us here. And there were only 6 people of us, I was the only textile man, to be able to solve that problem. And those people worked very hard. They couldn't figure out what was happening. All of a sudden, this little fiber, very short fiber, we will call it viscous. But they were not really fiber, they were powder-like thing. And it would stick somewhere, sometime on this side of the machine, sometime on this side of the unit, sometime up, sometime down, and all of a sudden it will come into the yarn, attracted to the yarn and make a defect. We couldn't solve it, and because of that, every machine came back except one in France, they kept, and one at the Park, then we kept. All came back, and we couldn't afford that, so we just closed the doors. So what I'm saying is that I begin to feel now that electrostatically that was, those whiskers, what we call whiskers, were actually fibrils, in my opinion. I could be wrong. Nobody analyzed, but now we have the facility here to analyze those things. And I think it can be done. But now Al is telling me that he already got some fibrillated fibers up to nanoscale, length and diameter.
Is there, lots of people are making them.
I know that.
It's not a commercial operation.
The guy who came here, met Harry, Harry, the filtration guy. He told me the same thing. He said, you can give me order today, I'll give you a filter made out of this cotton nanoparticles on the filters.
Yeah.
They're making it. But how adhesively they can put it on, I do not know. If somebody can figure out the way to put these fibers onto a fabric durably and also preserve the basic characteristics of the fiber. In other words, I'm assuming that its lumen and its primary wall and secondary wall and whatever you want to call it, is still intact, even though it's a nanoscale.
Absolutely not.
Then if that's what I said before I started, he didn't tell you that. If that is not true, forget about the whole thing.